What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit Hyland.com.
Take a knee and say, is it our father, they say? Is it
one of the hits?
Yeah. I've never understood why this isn't match fixing. If that's what's going on, then why is it not match fixing?
OTB AM, live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
Friday Night Racing.
On Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
It's the only place to be on a Friday afternoon. It's Friday Night Racing on Off the Ball, brought to you by HRI. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie. And I'm delighted to say we've got Tom Malone with us in place of Johnny Ward this week. But our special guest is Colin Keane. Colin, good afternoon to you. How are you?
How are you doing, Jerry? Not too bad now, and yourself?
I'm pretty good. All the better for having Tom Malone with us. Tom, how are you?
Yeah, good, Jerry. Good to be back.
Well, you're very welcome, and you can do your lap of honour about the tote tend to follow a little bit later on. But speaking of laps of honour, Colin, what's it been like since you broke the record?
It's been good, yeah. A lot of people have been congratulating me and stuff like that, but no, it was brilliant to get it across the line, so it was.
About a month ago, it became clear that, maybe even 6 or 8 weeks, it became clear that you were on track to do it. How do you, as the season unfolds, how do you keep it away from your thoughts, and how do you also, at the same time, kind of use it as a spur? What's the balancing act?
I suppose it kind of only came into the thought process after we got over the 100 marker and still had about 5-6 weeks left of the season. So we were just kind of hoping that things could keep going the way they were and that we'd get across the line, basically.
And what those numbers, right? Like, are they a motivation for you at the very start of the year? Because I know we've talked before and it's like, look, I want to beat the number that I had last year, and if I do that, then I know that things are going in the right direction. But how important are the numbers actually when you sit down at the start of the year, and how conscious are the specific numbers during the year?
No, as I say, you start out each year trying to beat the previous year's tally, and you hope to come the end of the year you get close somewhere, if not a bit better. I don't know, I think it depends a lot on the quality of horses you're riding. This year we've rode a lot of nice horses, the quality in the yard has got better, we've picked up the connection with Mr. Weld, and outside of that, my agent has done a very good job.
Yeah, things are going well. Tom, can you put some context on it? Obviously, Colin's a little bit too humble here, but this is a remarkable achievement. Like, it's now put him right in the record books with the greatest names in the history of Irish flat racing.
Yeah, and like the people who had this record before, and you're talking Joseph O'Brien broke it, a really long-standing record back in 2012, one that stood for Mick Kinnan for years and years. So it must be quite the achievement, because it's not just, you know, sort of broken. Remember when Colin, when you won your first jockey's title a couple of years ago, and it was the last day in Nace, and you had a load of friends and family on. I think the 100th winner was literally your last winner, and everyone cheered you back, and it was a really great day. I remember that. But I mean, this time, you know, is there even another number in your head at the back of this? Because, like I said, the record's been well and truly obliterated now, and you still have nearly a couple of weeks of season still to go.
Yeah, so I suppose we're trying to set a new record that no one might beat it for a while. We'd love to get into the mid 130s if possible. As you say, we've got some 2 weeks left in the season, so it is doable if we can keep going the right direction.
I suppose another thing to bear in mind here, like, Colin's had whatever 800 rides this year, and as well as all those winners, like, I think there's been over 100 seconds and over 100 thirds. So I mean, 40% of the time Colin gets on a horse, it's going to finish on the podium, which I suppose, Colin, I mean, where does the credit, is that Rory, like, is that your agent, does the credit go there? Or, I mean, that just must be a phenomenal feeling, even the confidence you must get. You're going to know that, you know, 40% of the time you're taking the right turn in the parade ring and you're going to be up there.
Yeah, a lot of it would have to go to Rory, but it's people you ride for as well, knowing their horses, being able to rely on their horses, like the boss's horses, they're rock solid. They always turn up. They always run the race. Mr. Wells is the same. Riding for good trainers, riding nice horses, it's a big help, so it is.
Talk to us about the year that Ger Lyons has had, because we had him on recently enough, and after he made his own milestone, his career milestone. He was kind of unaware of it a little bit until somebody in the yard, I think it might have been his wife, had said, you know, this is actually quite a big number coming up. And then it became a thing. It was in the middle of the season. What did you, you were aboard that night in Roscommon. It was a fire. Tell us, what was that like from your perspective? Because you're delivering something very special for him, for his history, for the yard. And it's kind of a big moment for everybody involved.
Yeah, we probably thought it would happen earlier that week. I thought we might hit the 100 mark and he might hit his 1,000 winner on the same night. And I think it was Nav, and earlier in the week we had some nice 2-year-olds running, and one had won and a few hit the crossbar. So it rolled on down to Roscommon, and Ofaya, he's a horse that always had plenty of ability but had disappointed us on occasions. And I suppose it just kind of all fell right. He was very quick out of the stalls. He got an uncontested lead and he was a good winner on the night, and it was great to get the Bosses 1,000 winner.
And does it mean something special for the yard? Because I know you were all in the midst of the season and there's big races still to come. You're kind of in between a period of big races just gone and big races to come. So maybe there wasn't the opportunity to fully celebrate just yet?
That's probably right, yeah. You'll probably, maybe at the end of the year when everything has calmed down a little bit and you look back and you'll appreciate what he has achieved and for the year that we've had.
What are your reflections on the year that you've had? Because, you know, obviously, I know you're obviously very determined to set that 130 mark. But when you look back at the start of the year, and the last time we had you on, I know it was just the racing was just coming back and we didn't really know what it was going to be like. So now looking back on the last 12, 14 months, you're getting on great. But what is it that is letting you hit the peak that you're at the moment, do you think?
It's the quality of horse, I think. This year we have a lovely bunch of 2-year-olds. I think if he's not in front, he might be second aid on numbers of runners to winners for 2-year-olds. A lot of quality in amongst them, and like we wouldn't be in this position without them. So they make the job a good bit easier.
Do you know their quality when you're riding them out? Like as soon as they arrive, are you like, "Ooh, this is pretty good," or do they all develop at different points and you're thinking you're hopeful but you're never quite sure until they're actually in the race?
Yeah, that's it. They all develop at different times and you never know until they're at the race course. Some horses can be machines, for one, for a better word, at home and don't bring it to the race courses, and it can be the other way around. Some horses slide under the radar and turn it on at the race courses, and that's where you want to be turning it on. And That's the main, I think that's where most success has come from this year with them 2-year-olds.
Again, the last time we had John, you were talking about the fact that the early part of the season had been wiped out because of lockdown and COVID in 2020, and that actually in your guys' yard, the horses tend to be prepared, ready to go early in the season. This year they've been ready to go early in the season, ready to go in the middle of the season, and they're still going at the end of the year as well. So it's obviously been fairly spectacular in terms of that crop of 2-year-olds.
Well, that's it. They had been ready to go early in the year, and the boss kept giving them more time and time, because if he thought they were ready when they were, he thought maybe another 2 weeks, 3 weeks, they'll even be more ready. So he was very patient with them, and they've definitely paid him back for that, as you can tell on his stats this year.
How much are you enjoying this at the moment? Like how do you feel like you're in the zone? Is it because it's such a weird scenario where for 2.5 minutes everything goes perfectly and you win a race, for 2.5 minutes everything goes perfectly and you can finish second or third, and the difference in how you feel and respond to that must be quite significant?
We're definitely enjoying it. Obviously we're riding a lot of winners, riding for good people and nice horses, so if we weren't enjoying it, I think there'd be something wrong.
And that relationship you mentioned with Dermot Weld, how did that come about?
I suppose obviously Tarnawa was where it kind of set off. We're in the right place at the right time to get on her, and then when we came home during the winter, Mr. Weld approached Jer and asked him about it, and they kind of came up with an agreement together, and it went from there.
Is that unusual enough, or is that something that would happen for a lot of people? Obviously, because, you know, I'm not sure if everybody's familiar, Jer Lyons essentially made you stable jockey when you were still an apprentice, so there's a deep relationship there.
Yeah, it's probably unusual enough. Most stables will have their own riders or retained riders, but look, we're not complaining. We're in a very fortunate position. We're riding for two of the biggest yards in the country at the moment and a lot of nice horses.
And is there
Sorry, Jeremy, I might just come in on that and how unique that is. I mean, it's just a compliment. He wouldn't say it, but it's just a compliment to Colin on his abilities and how in demand he is. Because if you think about it, he's had, what, 3 Group 1 winners over the course of the last 12 months. And they've been for Dermot Wells, Aidan O'Brien and Noel Meads, like a variety of yards away from Geraldine's yard. So you think of the careers of jockeys over the last few years, and it's only the very, very, very select few who are allowed, to move around and be used by several top yards at the same time, because often they try and keep this talent for themselves. So it's a great reflection on both Colin's ability, and you'd have to say Jura as well, and on his willingness to allow Colin to go and ride for the yards when available.
Yeah, it does speak to a good relationship with Ger Lyons that you guys trust each other enough that you're going to end up back together on the big days.
No, that's it, yeah. Like, Ger is my first port to call. But at the same time, if he thinks his horse isn't going to win or doesn't have a chance, he'd be the first man to tell you to get off it. He's a great boss to be working for, all he wants to see is me ride winners. So I'm in a very fortunate position.
When you're looking at the next race that you have a ride booked in, what's the work that you're doing in terms of the analysis of the opposition? And is that the bit, when I was talking about enjoying it, obviously you enjoy the winners and the success that's coming, but it's the meat and drink of the actual job itself. Is that bit enjoyable at the moment? And does that involve a lot of research on the opposition, or are you mostly focused on just making sure that your horse delivers what it's capable of?
Oh well, you look through your horse's form. If it's ran, or if it's for a maiden, if it's a first time outer, then you look at what has ran in the race, where you're drawn, what trainer has runners, who's riding them. So no, it's the same for every day, for every race. You have your homework done, basically.
And I know, again, we spoke to you last time, you'd been looking back at a lot of stuff over lockdown and kind of just checking back on it. Is that part of the race, the build-up to races, that's actually more enjoyable, where you're sitting just watching to see how the opposition works and to see what traits they have, so that in the middle of a race, you can almost respond subconsciously to what they're doing?
Yeah, you can. I suppose sometimes you can look into that too much. Maybe you kind of go out with your own plan, and when the stalls open, that could go completely out the window. So you kind of have to go to plan B. So some days you have to make it up as you go along, and hopefully it's right, and other days it won't be right.
Do you have a style? Do you like, is there a discernible style that you would describe as how you like to ride in a race?
I suppose different trainers have different traits, if you want to say. For Jair's horses, they're very straightforward. We do a lot of stall work at home. They're fit, so they jump well. Usually we don't like to take them back. We keep it very simple as possible, and if they're good enough, they'll win 9 times out of 10.
So it does sound like if part of the job is obviously analysing exactly who's in the race to know when they're going to go, or when they're going to be able to go, or if they're not going to be able to go, if that's good for you. But it sounds like mostly your job is to make sure that your horses run their own races, and that's where the confidence comes from.
Yeah, exactly. You're riding your horse to its own strengths and the way it's maybe trained. As I say, different trainers have different traits of training them or way they're like to ride, so you do what suits them.
In the middle of a season like this, how do you get away from it, or is it all racing all the time? Like, how do you get that work-life balance that everybody talks about being really important, and just make sure that you're not kind of burning out at any stage during it?
Yeah, no, when we're not racing, we're well able to relax. We go out for dinner or meet up with friends, things like that. When we have off time, we try to enjoy it, you know.
Away from racing, or is it very much a bubble as well? Because, like, with COVID and all the stuff and all the precautions, people have kind of definitely our circle of friends and our social lives have definitely contracted a little bit, and maybe fingers crossed everything's about to open up a little bit more for us in the coming weeks. Would you have been in a bit of a racing bubble anyway before COVID?
Obviously we have friends in racing, and I have friends from my own town at home, so they'd be the only two bubbles. But to be fair, the lads that we hang around with at home are into racing anyway, so it's pretty much all the one, to be honest.
Yeah, very good. And then the other thing that I'm always interested in terms of the Irish jockeys, when you have success like this, are you constantly looking at what's going on in England with an eye to there as part of the future? Or because of the quality of racing and because of the quality of the breeding that we have here, you know that you're going to be on horses that are always going to be competitive in Group 1s into the future. Is England on your radar at all?
No, not necessarily. The only thing, to be honest, I'd keep on a look at is the championship going on at the moment between William Buick and Oisin Murphy. It's really heating up at the moment, but I think there's only two winners, and it's only tomorrow, I think, is the last day for it, so that'll be interesting.
But there's no pangs of, oh, geez, I wouldn't mind being involved in that competition at some point?
Unless I'm asked to go, or if there's a horse I'm riding is going, yeah, that'd be the only thing that would keep me in, that would interest me in it, to be honest.
So one-offs, absolutely, but not foreseeable, lock, stock and barrel.
Yeah, one-off, yeah, not for long-term or something.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Well, especially when things are going so well. Just a general question about why things are going so well in Ireland at the moment. We do seem to have a new kind of cohort of jockeys who are your age and a little bit younger who are coming through, who are reaching spectacular heights very quickly. What do you put that down to?
I don't know. Each year the quality apprentice seems to be getting better. Smart. I suppose in Ireland a lot of it is to do with pony racing. I'd say if you name the top five apprentices in Ireland, they've all done pony racing. It's a big thing over here. I did it. A lot of the senior lads have done it. But yeah, some of the apprentices coming through at the moment are very smart, look to be very smart riders.
And is that something that keeps you all on your toes, that like make sure that you get up and you're doing your strength and conditioning work and looking after your diet as well? Or
they make you probably more hungry that they're chopping at your heels.
And what is,
I was always wondering about that. Sorry, like the Irish weigh room, it's completely changed now. I mean, you're sort of in it, what, about a decade now, realistically? And I mean, so much talent has gone from it, but the new talent that's in there, how do you kind of feel where you sit in there? Because you are, you know, a repeat champion at this stage. Joseph's gone, Tunica's gone, you know, obviously poor Pat Smullen, Lord Reston, but a lot of big retirements. I mean, even though you are one of the more experienced riders in there, it is kind of quite a young way room all the same, isn't it? You think of the likes of Ben Cohen, you know, he's got a big job now, but he's not that long in an apprenticeship rank. It is quite a young way room in Ireland in particular.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Like that, as you say, when you have some of the apprentices coming up to you and asking you advice or asking you about horses, you have to, I don't know, maybe it makes you feel older than you are.
Tom was very politely calling you old there, Colin. I don't know if you picked up on it.
I think so, yeah.
Well, I mean, look, you're all right. You've got the likes of Kevin Manning and Shemi Heffernan, who are always, you know, are they ever going to go? But, you know, Niall McCullough in there as well. So you're okay. You're not at that level yet, Colin.
Not yet, no, thankfully.
27-year-old veteran.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, that's the thing about it. I mean, the way room, the flat way room, it does have guys who will be around there for a long time, but it does seem kind of strange at the moment that there's so many prominent Irish jockeys that are younger, yourself included, Colin. You know, I'm calling you one of the older guys, and you're only 27.
Yeah, exactly. As you said, Kevin Manning, Niall McCullough, Shamie Heffernan, Declan McDonagh, they're the more, we'll say, more senior lads. And they're top lads. If you ever have a problem or need to talk to them, they're very approachable men, and you can understand why they're in the game so long, you know.
I wanted to ask you, there was two things I wanted to ask you. One was Andy Lee used to tell us about, so I don't know if you've ever seen Andy Lee being interviewed, but he's like literally the world's nicest man, a complete gent, and his job was to be a boxer to try and concuss his opponent. And we were always like trying to understand how he goes from being the world's nicest man to a knockout artist. And he said on the ring walk there's a transformation that happens. So the point goes from the changing room, the ring, you walk into the ring, and then by the time he gets to the ring, he's hyped himself up that he knows that his job is to try and knock out his opponent. With you guys, your mates in the weigh room, your mates off the course, but that bit just before the race starts, you have to become something of an assassin to try and beat them. And it's obviously been unbelievably successful for you. So 300 odd times this year in the money in Ireland. What's the psychological transformation? What happens in your mind to make you super competitive for that 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes, however long the race is?
I suppose we're all friends in the weigh room and off horses, but when we're on them in the stalls, we're ultra competitors. Obviously within reason, but no, firstly, I think you keep it safe, but sportsmanship at the same time.
And like, is there sort of a moment? I mean, when you're legged up, and is that kind of the time? Because you see you guys coming out of the weigh room, and there'd be a bit of chat, a bit of laughing, and then you know you go get to the owners, and then is it sort of like, you know, we're on the way to post now, this is when the sort of the game face comes on or whatever?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, as you get your leg up or as you're down towards the start or even at the stalls, it starts to get a bit quieter, lads get serious heads on them, and, you know, the game face is on.
And are you still chatting to people or listening to people in the stalls? At what point do you kind of tune out from that and just be at one with the animal?
Oh, you'd probably still be chatting away to the lads around you, trying to be relaxed and chatting to the animal to try and keep it relaxed as well. But once the stall's open, it's game on from then, I think.
And the other thing that, like, in the TV, we always see people chatting in the races. Can you hear anything that's happening when you're in the middle of a race?
Unless something is going wrong and there's someone screaming at you, that's about the height of it you'll hear.
And what are you thinking about?
What am I thinking about? Well, what you're thinking about when you're riding them is you're trying to keep your horse in the rhythm, trying to keep it smooth and get them to finish in the best possible position.
Well, I suppose, Colin, like, the difference, I guess, for a flat, like, that kind of thought process, if you're whipping along sort of between 10 and 12 seconds a furlong, you might only have 5, 6, 7 furlongs. I mean, to normal people, I guess, it feels things happen incredibly quickly. When do you kind of find that? I mean, I think it's like, say, Siskin winning the Guineas, and, you know, you're running down a road and you haven't got a gap. I mean, what is those kind of, how is the thought process there when everything around you is going a million miles an hour and you're like, oh my God, I just need to find a gap here?
Yeah, I suppose when it's happening quick and you're trying to, I suppose, as you say, you're looking for a gap, you're just trying to, not that you have much time, but take a deep breath, relax, and hope that it does go right, hope that the gap's come for you, because 9 times out of 10, if you're on the best horse, he'll be able to get you out of trouble. Siskin, as you say, is the prime example, because it all unfolded at the right time, and once the gap appeared, he was able to get in and get out within a couple of strides. So
that's the dream situation, I guess, when you find yourself in that problem, is it?
Sorry?
That's the dream scenario, that you have one that does just have tons of ability underneath you, and you just get you out of a hole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the dream, is right.
The bit in the middle of all that where you're kind of calm and still at the same time trying to find a tiny gap where most people wouldn't even be able to see one. Are you hooked up to monitors? Are you taking stats? Are you on a heart rate monitor? Are you interested in that side of it at all? Or is it still kind of all mostly feel and experience for you?
It's all feel and experience. No, we're not we don't have any of them heart monitors or anything like that on us, no.
And is that something you might be interested in down the line? Or is it actually an alien world and so therefore not something that you think would suit you?
For me, it wouldn't be for me now. I wouldn't have any interest in it, to be honest.
Right, you don't want to know. You're actually, for you, it's an internal thing. You're all kind of almost your own internal clock is more important.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
Right.
Colin, just something on that. I mean, I've heard, like, I don't know how Jerry uses them at home, but, like, some people would use heart monitors on the horse to monitor them, to see how they're kind of going and stuff like that. Have you ever used any of that kind of stuff in homework or, say, timed homework or any of that? Or is it all just sort of done by feel and that relationship between the kind of rider and the trainer and what feedback you give to him?
Yeah, no, we don't use any of that at home. Like that, it's probably about to do with the rider and the trainer. Like, I know our gallop by the back, from the back of my hand, and Jared knows by looking at the work, even when you, after work, pull up, come back to him, he can really tell you what I'm going to say to him. You know, he knows the gallop so well, and he's a great eye for the work, basically, is the easiest way of saying it.
That must feel great, yeah. Being in the middle of that, though, that, like, everybody actually understands each other so well, and you understand the animals so well, and then the success comes at the end of it. There must be incredible confidence in the work that you're doing and the quality of work that you're doing.
Well, that's it, yeah. When the horses work to a level and you say what you think, and then they go to the track and do what you think they're going to do, it's very pleasing, and as you say, it gives you confidence, so then you're able to, you're more confident in your own ability.
I'd one last thing, the life of a jockey, we've had countless jockeys on the show over the last 3 or 4 years who've come and told us the stories of their difficulties, and I'm always interested to see how you keep those kind of ups and downs at bay, just to kind of be as laid back as you clearly are, and to be enjoying it as much as you are. There is like that constant adrenaline in your life 3-4 nights a week where something amazing happens, and it can be difficult to get to sleep afterwards. It can be difficult to come down after it. So are you conscious of the fact that so many people in your profession have had mental health difficulties or battles with addiction? Is that something that you kind of just need to work on? You need to mind your mental health as much as you need to mind your physical health?
Yeah, definitely. It's I think it's a big thing in our sport. For me personally, I don't try to get too high or too low, because on the good days, obviously it's a great thrill, but on not so good days, you can be very low. So I try to keep somewhere in the middle. But yeah, unfortunately, it's a big thing in our support, and which I think that the Turf Club and the doctors are trying to help out with.
And is physical fitness part of your making sure that your equilibrium is there? Is that something that you do separate to riding out?
I suppose it is, yeah. Just the more fitter you are, and more you're conscious on the weight, I suppose, the more less sweating, I should say, you have to do. So it all rolls into one, I think.
The one thing
I think on the sweating side of things, I think COVID, Colin, correct me if I'm wrong, but for a long time there was no access to saunas for jockeys. So I know when we spoke to Sean Flanagan about this, he said his weight actually stabilised for the lack of saunas not being used. So did you have to I know you don't have that much trouble with your weight anyway, it's quite even, but did you have any issues with your weight or any changes you have to make because of stuff like saunas not available?
No, yeah, the saunas, they're still out of action. I didn't really use them much at the race. I kind of had my sweat done before I got to the races, so it didn't really make much of a difference to me. But like that, you see, some lads seem to be happier without the saunas at the moment for some reason. I suppose because they're probably more conscious of their weight, maybe.
Yeah, you don't have the ability to suddenly rescue things with a bit of a crash just before things, and maybe it's longer term planning and embracing the nutritionist advice and all that kind of stuff, which will definitely help some people in the long run. Well, listen, we wish you the very best of luck. I know you're in the middle of it. The one thing that strikes me is that you might end up regretting setting a massive record that you're not able to beat next year if it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, you're probably right there.
You've got to be careful what you wish for sometimes. Well, look, congratulations. It couldn't happen to a nicer character. Thanks a million for joining us today. Cheers. Really appreciate it.
Cheers, Colin.
Cheers, Tom.
That's Colin Keane there, Ireland's champion jockey, in the middle of breaking his records, taking the time out to chat to us. And one of the most unassuming people we've had in the show ever, really, Tom. I think for anybody listening who's uncertain, this is one of the greatest Irish sports performances this year. And if you look back, and you mentioned the people whose records he's breaking, it's a record that was set by Joseph O'Brien, and previous to that it was a record set by Mick Cannane. So it is a spectacular level of success.
Yeah, and it's kind of awkward, you know, you do really have to kind of pay compliments to people when they're sitting there, obviously, but like, he is a ludicrous talent and there's no getting away from that. I mean, I know Kevin Blake said on ITV a couple of weeks ago, and you know, it was clipped for social media and that sort of thing, but like, he is, for my money, like, he's definitely one of the best jockeys in Europe at the moment. There's no doubt about that. He is kind of the generational talent. You know, you talk about the success that Ger Lyons has with his two-year-olds in particular. The way Colin Keane rides two-year-olds in races, it's just phenomenal. He's just kind of a very tender jockey. He just educates these two-year-olds in such a brilliant way that he almost kind of tricks them into having a race, and they've such a positive race course experience. And I mean, that he is one of the key reasons why, you know, Ger Lyons and himself is such a, you know, such a brilliant striker with two-year-olds this season. I was just thinking back as well, there's so many great performances from different horses, but it's after different trainers. Like, you know, Search for a Song bounced back to form under Colin Keane. And Monique, there's a Group 2 winner for Jack Davison as well. Like, he gave her a brilliant ride. And you're talking about as well his style, and it's just, he doesn't have a side. He can just do anything. He can jump off from the front and make all. He can drop one out the back and finish like a train. He can, you know, he can stick up with the pace. He can come out with the pace. He can take it wide. He'll make his own decisions. I mean, you're talking about good rides. Remember, I was in Nace just... There was a time towards the end of August when Colin Keane was basically having a double or a treble, what seemed like every single day of the week, just winners, winners, winners. And, you know, he goes into a 45 to 65, like one of the lower grades races, and, like, he just gives this horse, Aloysius Lilius, I think the horse's name was, he just picked it up from a furlong and a half out at Nace, just something you don't normally do at Nace, and he did it, again, basically grade race, just out-thought everyone else, and he, you know, kicks her home, and it's another winner off the list. And again, it's not one that's ever going to make the headlines, but it just, for me, struck as like, this guy is just so tactically versatile and talented, and the world is his oyster. Really, like he said, he doesn't really want to go and ride in England at the moment, but realistically, you know, he could probably take the Judmont job and do the kind of, you know, Pat Smullen or Ruby Walsh type thing where you ride, you know, the big Saturday meetings in the UK if required. And he really is just an excellent talent.
Yeah, and maybe he'll be ready for that whenever it comes. Maybe he won't want to do it whenever it comes. There's no impetus, like no requirement to do it. Certainly the level of success that he's had this year and over the last number of years. And again, the fact that he's able to be freed up to go and ride for other big trainers on their best horses in the biggest races is the type of thing that will inspire loyalty and keep him at your lines for much longer. So it's one of those kind of, it's another bit of brilliant management from Ger Lyons of a talent.
That just struck me as well. Ger's like, well, oh, look, mine probably won't win this. You can go and ride a better horse. I mean, what a vote of confidence to get. Like they're so, like, that's just leadership, isn't it? You know what I mean? Like, that's management. That's leadership. It's just so, and it's kind of slightly rare to see in horse racing. We do tend to be a little bit blinkered and just focus on our own horses. We'd, oh, maybe, look, maybe if things go really right for this fella, he might run a good race. But, like, that's one of the great things about Ger as well, that he's definitely unique in the way he does things, the way he thinks about things. And like that, you know, now this fella doesn't have a great chance, Colin. You know, you jump off him, and if you've got a better option, take the better option.
Yeah, for sure. A reminder, Friday Night Racing is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. If you're listening on the radio and you want to get in touch, 53106 is the text number. Of course, you can always get us on Twitter at Off The Ball. There's a few other things that we should talk about that are happening in the general world. This we mentioned, Colin brought up there, the race for the UK Flat Jockey Championship, and it's come right down to the final day, and Ascot is going to be excellent tomorrow. The racing, the quality of racing, and there's some interesting Irish horses involved as well. But we should talk about what happened during the week with Oisin Murphy. He's just obviously had some difficulties that we know about, the ban for cocaine, and he's been breathalyzed in the past, and he was breathalyzed again just recently as well. So this would be a bit concerning, I suspect, if this pattern of behaviour persists.
Yeah, it's a big concern. I think it was last Friday at Newmarket, Oisin Murphy failed the breathalyzer test on the way into Newmarket Racecourse, and then he was stood down for the rest of the day on Friday. Now he's back racing again on Saturday. It's worth pointing out that, I mean, and this is no, you know, it's no endorsement, the level that is required to pass for riding is a more stringent level than would be for driving. So he actually would have passed the breathalyzer test if he'd been stopped at a checkpoint inside the road, but he was over the limit for driving. Now, the other point about this is about 1 o'clock in the day when this breathalyzer was administered. So, you know, you can extract what you want from that as well. But it is concerning. It's the second time he's failed the breathalyzer test. He also had the incident with the cocaine ban as well at the back end of last year. Things have been going well generally for Oisin Murphy. Obviously, he was top of the Jockeys Championship, continues to be, although as far as I think that lead is only now down to one as it stands at the moment. So it's going to be a phenomenal battle between himself and William Buick tomorrow at Ascot for Champions Day. But Oisin Murphy is kind of like a brand in racing at this stage. So he's very much a poster boy. He's a big job at Qatar Racing. He's very much an international star of the sport. He has, you know, a big following in Asia and Japan. He's gone over to Japan and Hong Kong and the like on winter stints and been very, very successful over there. So as high profile global stars of the sport go, Oisin Murphy is right up there. So it is slightly concerning that he has now failed to breathalyze the test and had a cocaine ban in the space of the last, sort of, what, 2.5 years.
Yeah, and now look, a certain roguishness has always been alluring when it comes to sports people and their brand. So hopefully everything is under control and he's okay, and we don't need to worry about that. But in terms of that race itself, and it strikes me that you're talking about the jockeys being brands. We pranked a Tory in the show a couple of weeks ago, and like, there's somebody who's in his 50s still riding away at that level. So these jockeys, particularly in the flat, have the opportunity to become super famous in comparison to the horses, who are obviously very short-lived in terms of their public consciousness that, you know, they're here until they're good enough to be put out stud, and then 18 months later in some cases, and 10, 12 races in some cases, it's like, right, off you go, and we never hear from you again until we're looking at your grandkids. With Colin Keane and with Oisin Murphy, there's actually an extra pressure then on the jockeys over a period of time, because people don't back the horse, they back the jockey in the flat.
Yeah, it's very much so. Like you said, you know, like who are the greatest flat horses in the last, you know, decade or 15 years? Frankel and See the Star. See the Star is retired at 3, Frankel retired at 4. You know, we only got to see, you know, See the Star 6 times in his 3-year-old career, Frankel, what, 14 times in all. So, you know, between those two horses, you're talking about a lot less than 25 runs between the pair of them in their lives. So it is very much up to the sport to sell its long-term stars. And realistically, at the moment, that is Frankie Dettori. You know, we had him at Belliestown there a couple of weeks ago for Barney Curley's thing, and it just it was unbelievable because he completely, totally, had already stole the show. So, yeah, Frankie Dettori, and what, 50 years of age, he is still the biggest draw in European horse racing. But it's intriguing to see, you know, Colin, I don't, like, obviously Colin Keane is never going to be a Frankie Dettori from that sort of, you know, limelight-hugging kind of way. He's far more humble and down-to-earth kind of person, but he's certainly the kind of person that just lets his riding do the talking, whereas Oisin Murphy maybe is sort of slightly, obviously, more out there from a promotional point of view than Frankie Dettori, or than Colin Keane, but it's intriguing to see what will happen with the pair of them over the next, again, that's it. We'll have the pair of them for in the next 20 odd years, yeah, or so, the way things go with flat jockeys, you know. Yeah. You know, it's particularly successful ones, they can easily ride into their mid to late 40s.
Who's going to win that? I mean, Murphy's one ahead, I think, is he?
Yeah, he's one ahead. So William Buick probably has a marginally better book of rides tomorrow, but it could actually come down to maybe the Champions Stakes, the QE2 itself tomorrow. But one each would probably be maybe a realistic, or maybe a 1-0 for either side tomorrow, because it's only a 6-race card at Ascot tomorrow, so it's not like they have a load of chances. And one of the aspects of COVID in the UK as well, jockeys are now not allowed to do 2 meetings in a day. So as part of, you know, those welfare measures we talked about in racing before, say the likes of when Richard Hughes and that would have been chasing jockeys type, and you could go and ride up to 10 times a day and you could do 2 meetings in one day, so that they're not allowed to do that anymore. So it does actually kind of make for these more tighter contests and where we get these opportunities for lads to not kind of streak clear by, you know, trying to take 70 rides in a week or whatever.
When listeners tonight are sitting on their couch tomorrow looking at Champions Day, what are the highlights going to be? What should they be looking out for?
Oh, the Champions Stakes itself is an absolutely phenomenal race. I think every horse in the race is rated north of 114, which is just incredible. Three horses rated over 125, which is just absolutely brilliant. And we're going to have, what, Mishriff up against Adyar. So it's just such an unbelievably deep, deep race. And there's Long Distance Cup, probably maybe the last time we see Stradivarius. The QE2s is over a mile. That's another brilliant race. You got Edgar Brown's got a couple of runners like the Snowfall in the fillies and mares as well. So it's a very, very good day's racing. Champions Day in the UK is a relatively new initiative. This is its 10th year. It's been blighted by issues most around the going. It's run on heavy going quite a few times. That's just, you know, you're running a race day at the end of October, start of November. In England, it's quite highly likely you're going to get very heavy going. So that's kind of blighted it from a spectacle point of view in the past. They won't have that this year. They've got good to soft going. They have absolutely brilliant lineups for their field. So, and obviously then you have the added drama of the Buick versus Oisin Murphy title race going down to the wire. So it has plenty of storylines. And look, hopefully, I'd like to see maybe Adyar come out on top as the proper champion 3-year-old. That'd be really good to see. I don't know whether he's going to be around next year, but you could definitely count him as the champion 3-year-old, you know, going on, and he won a derby. He can then follow it up during the summer in those all-age events, and then to go and win a Champions Stakes would be a really nice way for him. I don't know if he'll sign off. I think they might keep him around next year as well, but they have Hurricane Lane too. So who knows? But yeah, it'll be good to see how that all pans out tomorrow.
Okay, one last thing about the flat season. The COVID shortened year, and I kind of alluded to this a bit when we were talking with Colin a little bit earlier on, it obviously meant that we didn't get as much information about last year's 2-year-olds rising three and the this crop this year. It felt like we had a bit of a bumper year in the flat. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, it's kind of strange to assess. I mean, I think the real story this year has been the re-emergence of Godolphin as a superpower. You know, Charlie Appleby has just had the most brilliant year. He probably is the best 2-year-old in training in Native Trail, who won on Longines Champions weekend, and then of course he followed up in the Dewhurst. He won the Irish Derby and the English Derby. He's got Adyar and Highland Re and Hurricane Lane. So the re-emergence of Godolphin as a force is definitely one of the key storylines. From an Irish point of view, again, but Colin and what he's done and what he's achieved, and those numbers are just incredible on the Irish side. And there's been a very much a spreading of the wealth. You know, you like Jessica Harrington had an unbelievable year. You talk about Champions Weekend in Ireland. You had Geraldine had 4 winners on the day. Jessica Harrington won 2 Group Ones. Aidan O'Brien hasn't had the greatest year. He's had a good year, but probably, you know, he's obviously still going to be champion trainer in Ireland. But others have eaten into his power base, and particularly like the Jessica Harrington, Geraldine, Eddie Lynham got a Group One this year. Great to see him do that. Aidan McGuinness picked up a Group One. That was another brilliant story in on Arc Day. You've seen some young trainers, like I mentioned, Munista for Jack Davison. Like to see him get a Group Two win in the Curra as well. So good young trainers, The criticism that's always levelled at Irish racing is, oh, well, you know, you'll have to come over and take on Aidan O'Brien. It's a one-man show. And, like, this year has just shown beyond doubt that it really isn't the O'Brien show. I mean, it's not just, obviously, his sons are challenging him now with Joseph and Tunica. But, you know, the emergence of Jer, like, Jessica Harrington's just gone to a completely different level of quality of animal in her stable as well. Just with the owners and the buying power, she's seem to got at the yearling sales in the last couple of years in particular, and she's really sort of seen the benefits of that. You know, and like I said, then you have, you know, Aidan McGuinness as well. He has just come on to the next level to see him get that Group One, and it's, like I said, it's been a good spreading of the wealth over the course of the season this year.
All right, there's one last bit of business that we need to get into. I'm just going to read the script. The biggest names in flat racing will line up at Ascot on Saturday to decide which member of the OTB team takes the bragging rights in this year's Tote 10 to follow. Bolshoi Bally for Johnny Ward goes head-to-head with Mishriff for me in the Champion Stakes, while Tom, that's you, has favourite Palace Pier running in the day's other bonus points race, the QE2 Stakes. As one door closes, another one opens, with the Jumps Tote 10 to follow opening for entries at the end of the month. We'll talk to you a bit more about that later on in the year. You can keep an eye on tote.ie for more. Tom, it's not even close anymore, and it looks like you're going to lap us with Palace Pier.
Yeah, Palace Pier is good. I actually thought about it, like Batashery let me down as well, and I had considered putting in Oxstead in my 10 to follow, but look, it's been a very good year, and I'm certainly very happy to be top of that table.
Well, unless you're going to Devon Lockett somehow, I'm willing right now to crown you champion ahead of Champion Day. So well done, Tom, and thanks for entering.
Yeah, well, look, thanks, Jura. Do you want a couple of winners this weekend?
Yes, of course we do. We always do. Go for it.
Oh, good, good. Well, I think Colin actually has some brilliant rides over the course of the weekend in all of the pattern action. But I mentioned Search for a Song, who kind of bounced back to form from Moidler last time I had the Curra. Another horse called Homeless Songs, Colin will ride as well for Dermot Weld and the Moidler Cutters, who's quite disappointing on Longines Champions weekend, but he's by Frankel. He runs at Leopardstown at 3:15 on Saturday. So I think Homeless Songs will definitely bounce back to form. I saw on the price there, it's around about 3-1. So I'd imagine he'll go off shorter than that. And the other horse I like is actually at Ascot, Frankie Dettori in the last, a horse called Sunray Major at Ascot at 4:30. It's in the Balmoral Handicap, and you'll be familiar with any of the stuff we've done over the last few years. You're always looking for a group horse in a handicap, and if this fella is not a group horse in a handicap, I don't know what is. But Sunray Major at Ascot at 4:30, and at Leopardstown on Saturday at 3:15, Homeless Songs, and hopefully crown my crown my brilliant year after the 10 to follow it as well.
Tom, great to have you back. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Ger.
Tom Malone with us this week in place of Johnny Ward. He'll be back with us next week, but great to have Tom back as a friend of the show. Friday Night Racing is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. We'll see you next Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock on all of our social channels, and then again, of course, on Friday evenings at 8 o'clock on Off the Ball on News Talks.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.